And a very good Sunday morning to you. How you doing? Sunday, May 31st, 2020. The last of spring, is it? Is it today? It's another glorious one in Salford. It's absolutely glorious here, as it is in much of the country today. Welcome to Sunday View. I am Richie Allen, the one and only, and I'll be with you for the next hour or thereabouts, looking through the UK Sunday newspapers, but also we'll have a listen to the BBC and Sky News morning talk shows as well. Thanks for joining me as always. Great to be with you.
It's the BBG, not the BBC. You're listening to the Richie Allen Radio Show, live from Salford in Greater Manchester.
It's the Richie Allen Show, broadcasting live on richieallen.co.uk and multiple platforms around the world. And now, here's your host, Richie Allen.
And you know how to reach me by now. The best way to do that is by tweeting me. So tweet the program. It's at Richie Allen Show. And I'll be going through your tweets as we go along. Yes, I think I've got quite a bit to get through today. Meaning that I might go over the time. I haven't a clue. But I'm under no pressure, am I? Glorious again. It's fabulous here. Late spring, sunshine, the final day of May. There's nothing like it.
I need some time in the sunshine.
Sunshine.
I need some time in the sunshine.
Yeah. It's lovely and people are going mad, apparently. They're racing to the country's national parks. I put a rhetorical question out on Thursday on the Richie Allen Radio Show. I was wondering, I was pondering, were the national parks open? They are, apparently. Good job, good job. You might be visiting one today. You might very well be. I want to say hi to Josh. How you doing, Josh? I was out and about on Saturday morning and a very, very nice man approached me and introduced himself as Josh. He's just moved into the area, or back to the area, and he works at a local mental health hospital. And he's been listening to the radio show for a few years, and he thought that he might bump into me around the park area. And he did, and it was lovely to meet him. So, Josh, how you doing? Thanks for making my Saturday morning. And last night, I was honoured to be the guest of the one and only Spiro Skouras on his incredibly popular YouTube channel, Spiro. You know all about Spiro. Great guy, formerly of Newsbud, of course, amongst other parishes. Great journalist. And he invited me on his programme last night to shoot the breeze about a number of issues. I was happy to do it. And if you want to watch that, you should be subscribed to Spiro on YouTube anyway. It's pinned to the top of Spiro's Twitter page at the moment. And I've retweeted it. It was lovely to be on with him. He's a great guy. And at the very end of that, when we'd stopped recording, he told me a hilariously funny story about something that happened to him back in 2009. But I'm asking him to save it and to speak to us about it at Christmas. Yes, all very mysterious. Lovely fella, great journalist. Thanks for having me on the programme, Spiro. I really appreciate it. I was watching RTE News yesterday. That is Radio Telefiche Éireann, the Irish national broadcaster. And my jaw dropped. Now, me and you, what do me and you have in common? We've lots in common. I think one of the things we have in common is that it's not very easy to shock us. Because we've seen so much, haven't we? Not just in recent weeks, of course, but in forever. Since we began to understand that things are not as they seem. You think we're unshockable. Well, my jaw dropped to the floor yesterday. Levels of insanity reaching new highs or new lows, you might say. Lunacy. The RTE broadcaster, the national broadcaster, went to a care home in Cork. Why? Well, because the residents there are over the moon because they can finally be hugged by their younger sons and daughters. Because of a new machine. A machine that makes it possible to hug people without touching them. It's actually called the Hugatron 2000. That's what it's called. And it's basically a big sheet of plastic that hangs from the ceiling and covers the door. And you can put your hands into the plastic and your feet and immerse yourself in the plastic and hug somebody on the other side of the screen. The Hugatron 2000. And RTE showed people getting fitted into the sheet of plastic as the other person on the other side of the sheet does the same, bringing people together. The Hugatron 2000. But at the same time, keeping people apart. Hugatron 2000. Did you hear that, Tom?
No. Could you repeat it? Because I can't believe my fucking ears.
Yeah, Amy?
What kind of fuckery is this?
Yeah, it's absolute fuckery. And we can hear, sadly we can't see, but you can see it because I tweeted it yesterday. We can hear Declan, a senior citizen, as he is approaching the Hugatron 2000 to hug his daughter, whom he hasn't been able to hug since the beginning of March. Listen to this.
How long is it since you gave Rochelle a hug?
Oh, Jesus Christ. Kill me now before you send me to a place like that. Kill me now! Here we go.
How long is it since you gave Rochelle a hug?
How long since you gave Michelle a hug?
Oh, it's a long while, isn't it?
A long while?
Well, look what's happening today.
Look what's happening today. We bought the Hugatron 2000.
You over this way now. Look over here, Jack. Over here, Toss now.
Over here!
Pat will show you there now.
I told the future Mrs. Allen, shoot me between the fucking eyes if I ever get dementia or Alzheimer's and I can't do things for myself. Don't send me there or any place like that where I'm being screamed at. The Hugatron 2000. Get into the fucking sheet, Declan.
Forward. Yeah.
Okay.
Whoa.
Aww.
Declan,
aww.
That's lovely.
That's lovely, Declan.
Asher, God help
him. That's so Irish. Asher, God help him. God is nowhere to be seen. God had nothing to do with the Hugatron 2000. Of that, I am absolutely sure.
Very emotional.
He's kissing the plastic and everything.
He's kissing the plastic and everything. You just couldn't make it up. The RTE producers and the outside broadcast crew, they couldn't believe their eyes, their ears. He's kissing the plastic.
He's kissing the plastic and everything.
I said to Caroline, I'm not joking, by the way. It's not bravado. I said to the future Mrs. Allen, if anything happens to me, if I ever get to the stage where I need to be put into it, just fucking kill me. I'll sign a note. It's not even do not resuscitate. It is kill me. One flew over the cuckoo's nest. Find a 7 foot tall fucking Indian to put a pillow over my face to end it. Imagine being screamed at by people like you're 3 years of age. Get into the Hugatron 2000. Come on, Declan. Come on. Oh, I thought it was a gag. When I saw the story yesterday afternoon, I thought it was a gag. I said, can't be real this. But it is. And if you think that's bad, 9 minutes past the hour. Good morning, by the way. If you think that's bad, the BBC published an article yesterday. Couldn't believe I was reading what I was reading. Wait till you hear this. This is on bbc.co.uk/news. If you think I'm making it up to make you giggle. Well, I'm not making it up. Jean-Anne Crowley thinks I'm making it up. No, it's the Hugatron 2000. It's real. A bit of plastic that hangs from the fucking ceiling. And you force, you scream at an old dude to get into it so that he can hug his daughter without them actually physically touching. It's one step up from the wheel the old person to the sidewalk and the drive-by visits that we heard last week. Do you remember that? The drive-by visits. Out you go now, Declan. We'll park your wheelchair at the side of the road and your daughter can drive past you. No, we've got a Hugatron 2000 now to replace the drive-by visits for the OAPs. So the BBC published an article yesterday. It is entitled, Social Distancing, a Practical Guide on How to Socialise Now. This is the new normal. This is fantastic. So why do we have a new guide on how to socialise? Well, because under new rules from tomorrow, people in England, we can meet in groups of up to 6 people in outdoor spaces like parks or private gardens. as long as we remember to stay 2 fucking meters apart. How hard is it, people? How difficult is it to obey? So from tomorrow, we can meet 6 people in a group, and we can do that so long as we observe the 2 meter distance. Things are different in Scotland and Wales. If you're Scottish or Welsh, you can look it up yourself. So the BBC asked the doctor and television presenter, Zand von Tulleken, they asked him to tell us how we can ensure that our gatherings are as safe as possible in the near future. So Dr. Zand von Tulleken, by the way, there is no improv from me. I'm going to read you this guy's real words. Vaudeville, dear listener, Sunday View, you ready? Are you ready? This is Dr. Zand von Tulleken. These are his words. Now that lockdown is easing, we might be thinking about inviting people over. The first thing to do is to think about who you're inviting over and what pressures you will put on them, because we are very differently vulnerable to this virus. For example, if you're inviting overweight men who are older to your gathering, they face a very different risk to young families with young children. So you might not want to invite an overweight older man, because he might be more susceptible to the virus. If you're thinking of inviting a 70-year-old overweight man, I would consider having quite a detailed conversation about the risks they were prepared to accept. How to arrive. If you are hosting an event and people can get into the garden directly, brilliant, writes Dr. Zand. If they can't and people are walking through the house, it would be reasonable to tell them to wear a mask, wash their hands when they get into the house, and then go straight to the garden. They shouldn't touch anything. They need to get to the garden as quickly as possible. How you there, John and Margaret? How you there? How you there, Michael? Get into the fucking garden! Don't touch anything! Right? How to arrive is very important, if they can get directly to the garden. Reunions with children. You're not allowed to hug people, and that's the rule. But in my experience, if a small child wants a hug, it's virtually impossible to stop them. I would say, if you do end up having a hug, at least don't grab the person and pull them into your face. Full frontal hug is dangerous, but a child hugging your leg is much less dangerous. So if you want to hug a child that you haven't seen in a while, let the child hug your leg. Hug your leg. These are the new rules going forward. The new advice. Booze. Well, you should do everything possible to signal that this is not a normal gathering. You're having a picnic or gathering at a time of a deadly serious disease circulating widely in the population. Alcohol does break down inhibitions, and people get much more tactile when they're drunk. So consider not having any booze at your party. But if you're having a party and there's no booze, don't waste your time inviting me. I won't be there. Hand washing rules. Very good. Very important. You could ask your guests to set their alarms for every 45 minutes or every hour. Yes. So when your guests come to your house directly through the garden, you tell them to take out their smartphone and set the alarm to ring every 45 minutes so that they can run to the nearest wash station to sanitise their hands, according to Dr. Zand and the BBC. Why not? Anything, he says, that you can do to flag to people that this is not a normal gathering will make you and them feel much safer. Oh, God, eh? You get a bit tactile when you've had a few drinks, so drinks maybe not a good idea. Let the children hug your leg. Your leg be Jesus. That's it. We're living in vaudevillian times. This is the Richie Allen Show Sunday View. Ah, be Jesus. I'll be back with the front pages after Sammy Davis Jr. Nothing like the Richie Allen Radio Show. All right, everybody. The genius of Sammy Davis Jr., Candyman, on Sunday View with me, Richie Allen. Those guidelines on the BBC website are real. The Hugatron 2000, as revealed to us by RTE News, is real. This is happening. It's extraordinary. I'd like you to do an experiment with me. Phone somebody up in the week that you haven't spoken to for a couple of weeks and ask them to come around in the style of Dr. Zand. Ask them to come around, ring up your mate John or your mate Michael or your mate Tony or your mate Mary or Margaret and say, hey, listen, do you want to come over? Listen, let's get some things straight first of all. What do you weigh at the moment? Why do you ask? Well, because if you're overweight or obese, I'm not prepared to take the risk. Right, okay. Listen, if you are coming over, you best that you get directly through the garden, even if you have to jump over a fence. Because you can't come through the house and touch any of my things and leave your dirty coronavirus germs. And when you are here, do set your mobile phone to tell you every 45 minutes to wash your hands. Do it for the crack and see what they say. It'll be funny. Here's something that isn't funny. Protests in Minneapolis and Los Angeles and other places in the United States have been covered on the front pages of the UK Sunday newspapers today. The protests, obviously, about the death of the very unfortunate Mr. George Floyd, which we've been talking about last week. Those protests continue and the UK media is covering them. The Sunday Telegraph, headline, Trump puts army on alert as riots sweep US. Self-explanatory. Also a story about COVID on the front page of the Sunday Express too, about test and trace, testing and tracing. We'll leave that. Sunday People leads with test and trace is national disgrace. There are all sorts of claims being made today that the system in place to test and trace with the 10,000, in fact it's 25,000 trackers, people who will be doing it. Apparently it's in total disarray. Right, that's a Sunday People. The Observer, anger spreads across US after Floyd murder. And also, top scientists say Cummings has broken trust in COVID policy. That's about Dominic Cummings, of course. Self-explanatory. We'll race through these. The Mail on Sunday says you couldn't make it up. That's the headline, you couldn't make it up. And it's about the man who dobbed in Dominic Cummings, Boris Johnson's advisor. This is a teacher called Robin Lees, a former teacher. Apparently he blew the whistle or pointed a finger at Cummings breaching the lockdown. And the Mail on Sunday alleges that Mr. Lees himself broke restrictions. Pot calling kettle black and all of that. Mail on Sunday. Sunday Express goes with millions more get taste of freedom. This is about the easing of lockdown restrictions tomorrow, where, as I just mentioned, we can go to a park with six people as long as we maintain the 6 feet or 2 metre distance from ourselves. The Sunday Mirror. Now, I love Bez from the Happy Mondays. I've met Bez a few times and I've interviewed him a few times and he's a lovely man. He really is, and he's a very smart guy too. Appearances might be to the contrary, but Bez is a very smart cookie. And Bez is on the front page of the Sunday Mirror. The headline is, Bez, I can't wait for Happy Monday. Do you see what they did there, the Sunday Mirror? Bez can't wait for the restrictions to end. And that really is the front page of the Sunday Mirror. The Sunday Times has a mishmash of stories on the front page. One of them is the headline, Rap Star's Plea for Peace as America Burns. This is a rapper called Killer Mike. And they say that the Yanks don't get irony, eh? Killer Mike, but what do I know about rap? You could write it on the back of a stamp, nothing. Anybody know, is Killer Mike any good? I know I've got rap fans in my audience. I know this because I get emails from time to time asking me to play rap. I do. Is Killer Mike any good? Well, he has been pleading overnight for peace as the protests seemingly, we'll come to that in a minute, turn violent. There's a Brexit story on the front page of the Times as well. The Star on Sunday leads with a picture of Charles Bronson, not the actor, but the prisoner who was in Broadmoor, is in Broadmoor. I think there was a film, a movie, and I think Tom Hardy was in it. Correct me if I'm wrong. The headline is, Pickle Me When I Die. Charles Bronson wants to have his brain pickled in a museum and he wants his ashes scattered at Broadmoor High Security Hospital. And he wants his will in a tattoo and he doesn't want too many people at his funeral. That is the front page of the Star on Sunday. Now, 23 minutes past the hour, Timur, obviously serious things. Curfews have been ordered in cities in America to try and stem unrest, which was sparked by the death of George Floyd in police custody last week. But the curfews have been defied in many areas. And the BBC and others are focusing on shops being looted, cars being burned and buildings being attacked. Riot police used tear gas and rubber bullets. Donald Trump has threatened to send in the army. Okay? If it continues. And as you know by now, a white ex-policeman called Derek Chauvin is charged with murdering George Floyd, who was 46, when he was killed last Monday. We've all seen the video by now. It's horrendous. He's lying face down. He's not resisting. He's handcuffed behind his back. This guy kneels on his neck for nearly 9 minutes, despite Mr. Floyd saying repeatedly that he's in serious distress. Before we hear from a very interesting man who works for Fox News, let's get the UK take on it. The Foreign Secretary, Dominic Raab, was on Sophie Ridge this morning. She asked him for his thoughts on what has been happening and also on the rhetoric, the language being used by Donald Trump. Here's Dominic Raab. And we should be hearing Dominic Raab. Oh, Jesus. The best laid plans. Here he is, Dominic Raab.
Well, Sophie, I'm not going to start commenting on the commentary or indeed the press statements that other world leaders make or indeed the US president. What I would say is that obviously, as you said, that footage of what happened to George Floyd was very distressing, as has been the scenes across America of the rioting and some of the violence. And what we do know is that the lead suspect has now been charged with murder. There is a federal review and we want to see a de-escalation of all of those tensions in America come together.
Sometimes, though, you do need to comment on the statements made by other leaders, though, don't you?
We'll comment on actions and stuff that is material to the relationship we have, but I'm not going to be drawn into the questions of whether the US president's remarks were the right thing to do. I leave them to comment on their own domestic policies.
Why not?
Well, I think all it does is create a distraction from all the things that we're doing. We're working very closely with the US on coronavirus, on many other things. And frankly, it becomes a media distraction and I want to be focused on the job at hand.
Dominic Raab. Now, I heard overnight a Fox News contributor called Lawrence Fox. He's a black man himself and he's covered civil unrest in the past, particularly when a black man or woman has been killed by the police in very obviously, I don't want to be carefully choosing my words, but when black men and women have been killed by the police and they've been unarmed and they seem to be of no threat to the police officer, Lawrence Fox, journalist, himself a black man, he's covered the unrest in the past. He's very used to it. And his take on the protests and how they have become violent, his take is very interesting. Here he is on Fox News, Lawrence Fox.
Just by my experience of reporting on protests and being in the thick of Baltimore, Ferguson, that the bad actors were people that weren't from the area. This wasn't something that I just made up. It's just a matter of experience and being there on the ground. And as you know, the mayor and the governor, as the records are starting to come out, they told us that all the people that they arrested were people from out of state. That's what's going on right now. You have people that have their own agenda, that want to, that are anarchists, that are part of Antifa, that are professional paid protesters. I know this because as I would go to city to city, I would see some of the same faces. These people's jobs are to agitate and to stir up hatred. There are a lot of peaceful protesters that are on the ground. And so what needs to happen is that the governor really needs to establish control. There has to be a clear separation between the people that are exercising constitutional protected protest and the anarchists. The people that are there on the ground that are from the community, they don't want to set up the businesses that they go to on a daily day basis on fire. It's the people that have absolutely no connection to the community that are seeking set those places on fire. And so what the governor needs to do, I mean, this is a fourth chance. I mean, this happened Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. This is Saturday night. And it seems to be that there is no control. There is no coordination that is taking place. And that's problematic.
Mm. I really liked listening to this guy. You can see that interview on Fox News. We'll hear a bit more in a minute. But this is, these are levels of malevolence and interference and programming that most people just can't get their heads around. You look at all the... We have these discussions now exclusively in one place, and it's Twitter or Instagram or Facebook. I know that sounded a bit silly, didn't I? What I meant by social media, that's where we have these discussions. And middle America, you know, middle class, let's say middle class white America, sees this stuff and immediately adopts the position of blacks are animals. Said this to Spiro Skouras last night on Spiro's channel. Look at those animals burning down their own houses, their own shopping centres. Look at them stealing. They're only animals. White middle America. And this is identity politics writ large. And they're terrified of these people. Terrified of them. And they see this and they see, look, anarchy. And what this guy is saying, Lawrence Fox, and we've touched on this over the years on the Richie Allen radio show, is basically agent provocateurs. Whenever there's an emotional flashpoint, a man is killed by a police officer, and it's unlawful, it's an unlawful killing, whether it's murder in the second degree or the third degree or manslaughter, that's up to a judge, it's up to a prosecutor. But he was unlawfully killed. You've got an emotional flashpoint. People decide to come out righteous. Righteous anger. Righteous people say enough is enough. And in come the professional agitators to burn, to pillage, and to create a narrative for the people watching at home, who then take to social media where the identity politics Olympics begins. Look at the blacks, look at the blacks, look at the blacks. Look at what multiculturalism has done. This is what you get, right? And they use very, very nasty words to describe the people there. What Lawrence Fox is saying is, and he repeats it here in a second, is people in these communities are like, well, who are these people? Where have they come from? And this is a long, long time used tactic by the elite or the hidden hand, whatever you want to call them. And he doubles down on it here again, Lawrence Fox on Fox News. It's very good.
The main people that are here are legitimate protesters that feel like there is injustice and there is going on in this country, and they're speaking out against it. And they don't want that message to be clouded by people that are agitators and looters, that people have their own agenda. And so if we were just build those relationships and talk to those community leaders, I mean, I have a plethora of sources that are on the ground that are giving me intel from city to city, because there are real leaders in the community and they want to see change happen, but they also don't want to see the businesses that they have helped build, that they have coordinated with mayors and governors and even the White House to get opportunity zones and finances to build these businesses. They don't want to see them burnt down. And so it's going to take basic community policing and relationships to get that done.
Yes, Lawrence, he's very good. But basic community policing is a thing of the past. Again, none of the decisions taken are in isolation. All of this stuff is connected. You know, I was listening to some lunatics this morning saying, oh, it was a false flag to start the violence. Mr. Floyd wasn't murdered. It was a false flag. It was a hoax. That's bullshit. The cops are always killing people. It's classic problem reaction solution, this. Local people come out to protest. Rioters, professionals, many of them, bust in, many of them. Bust in. There's a remarkable clip doing the rounds of Twitter yesterday where a young black protester, abiding by the law, protesting. He's exercising his constitutional right to protest. He comes across a pallet full of bricks. that had been conveniently left in an area that would be populated by a crowd of protesters. A pallet load of bricks that could be picked up and chucked at the police or thrown through windows. Local people come out to protest, and then the professionals, the rioters, come in. They burn, they loot. It horrifies the nation, who demand that it's stopped. And then Trump says, I can get around posse comitatus and I can put the army on the streets. And the beat goes on. I've said this over and over again over the years, and I'm nobody special. You've got to start with the desired outcome to understand what has happened, to understand who has put into place the measures to allow the chaos that results in the desired outcome. Look at the desired outcome and everything else fits into place. So what is the desired outcome? Well, they desire sweeping new powers, previously unthinkable to most people, to control our movements, to lock down cities, to lock down countries when they say that it's necessary. Sweeping new powers to tell you what medication you should have and shouldn't have and when you should have it. That's the desired outcome. The desired outcome is to once and for all to put down any rebellion to their global depopulation transhumanist agenda. That's the desired outcome. And how did he do it? Well, create chaos, set the conditions for chaos, play people off against one another through race baiting, through identity politics. And while all that's going on, you introduce your long planned for solution. Of course there are dark actors in there inflaming protests, burning and pillaging. Perfect for the news channels to film and report upon. And amongst all of that are the local people, bewildered. Who the hell are these people? And then you have the race war online. You have the alt-right and the far-right using horrible words to describe black people, saying that black people are stupid and that they're a subspecies. Look at them. Look at the animals burning their place down. And of course, righteously indignant black people meet that head on. Of course they do. On social media. And the establishment laughs its ass off. Lovely. Lovely jubbly. Look at them doing exactly what we want them to do. And while they're doing all of that, everybody else is going, this has to be stopped. And Trump says, yes, we'll bring in the army. Long planned for. None of this is, you know, knee-jerk reaction to protest. This has long been planned for. And I know this to be true. This is not conjecture. It's a fact. And it's playing out in front of our eyes. We'll take a wee breather. Back in a minute, we'll have another tune. I'll read some of your tweets. And then we'll talk a little bit about COVID-19. Which, thankfully, until this point of the programme, we've managed to avoid. Because we're getting tired of it, aren't we?
Renowned healer Mark Bajerski travels the world to find the most unique and powerful crystals for self-healing. Since the ancient times, crystals have been used as healing tools. They hold a natural healing vibration and are highly charged in positive energy. Mark teaches how to channel the universal energy and transfer it to the crystal to activate its healing power. Each crystal is used for its unique ability to target a different physical or emotional challenge. Mark Bajerski is an author, healer, speaker, and founder of the Pure Energy Healing Academy. He shares powerful messages of inspiration and healing on his daily YouTube videos, reaching millions worldwide. Mark's crystals, healing oils, and incense sticks are most sought after by other healers. His collection is available online at www.markbajerski.com. His work is presented through Lemon House, a company that creates and curates consciously made gifts.
Let me read a few of your tweets before we move on. Keith tweets, Richie, the tactic of using agent provocateurs or agent provocateurs has been used for at least 120 years and longer, but the average Joe won't get it, says Keith. Lennon used precisely the same tactics. And echoing that, my mate Stuart says, or Bass Ninja in fact, says, rioting is just shitting on your own front door. It's obvious that all protests get infiltrated. Violence is what they want. Yes, Bass Ninja, yes, they want violence. Order out of chaos. They want madness on the streets. Because none of that anger will be directed against them. It'll be identity group versus identity group. And if you're a black man or black woman, don't be offended when I say identity group. We're all identitarians. I don't give a fuck what you look like. It's never mattered to me. I see you as a nice person or not so nice. That's my criteria. I don't care. And if you say you don't have too many black friends, Richie, well, I wasn't brought up around black people. And I've not lived around too many black people. And I don't live in a very, you know, upwardly... Well, I don't live... I live in a working class housing estate. It's mostly white people here. I don't care what you look like, and most people don't. But they have... I thought we were getting past all of that, but in recent years we've been kind of submerged again. It's almost like we're being drowned. Our heads are being forced under the water. This adherence to identity. It's what they want. Every identity group to think that you're some sort of exclusive group of people being targeted, being oppressed, fighting with another group over which one gets to be the biggest victims. So I'm not offending you. Yes, I know you are an ethnic group of people. I know. But I don't see you as an ethnic group of people. You're either nice or you're not. It's as simple as that, isn't it? John Parsons, brilliant comment here. He says, can you imagine how quick things would change if instead of rioting, the people of Minneapolis who feel anger over this simply withheld taxes and whatever other payments the state extorts from them? Yes. That is the answer. For people to put down their fucking arms, to dissolve their egos, to reject narcissism, and to understand that we are all under the same fucking jackboot. I've said it a million times. And then, non-violent, because they want violence. Violence is only acceptable when you have no other option, when you must defend yourself. They want violence for the reasons given by some of the other tweeters. Right? Non-violent civil disobedience, non-compliance on a large scale is the only way through this, in my opinion. But as long as we're fighting with one another over who's the biggest arsehole and who's the biggest racist, and who's getting picked on more than the next person? We'll never ever come to a place where we say, Jesus, we have a common enemy. You know, I don't think they could have planned it any better than what we are witnessing now, not just with what's happened in Minneapolis, but with the response to the so-called virus. They couldn't have planned it any better. It's incredible. Good morning to Liz. Good morning to The O'Leary. Bristol Bean says the owners of the world must be laughing their heads off about how unbelievably easy they can fool, manipulate the public. The stupider the rule, the more obedience. The more ridiculous the rules, the more people will comply, says Bristol Bean. Yes. Yes. William in Scotland says all deception is always the same old tricks in terms of division and chaos, and still people don't see it. It's worse now. Ian tweets, the military were already in place in the US and they are in place in the UK too. We won't riot though, he says. Charlie Girl says, anyone can be a prick regardless of the colour of your skin. I was brought up to not notice colour, so I find it perplexing when people refer to colour. Chris tweets, he's responding to John. I wonder this too, he says. Life is digital now. Boycott something, like Direct Debit says. Chris there, let's move on. Before we move on, let's have a tune. Here's a bit of Dean Martin. When we come back, we'll have a little bit of coronavirus news. And I'll try not to make it too boring, all right? Bit of Dino. Lovely. Liz loves a bit of big band music on a Sunday morning. So do I, Liz. Welcome to the programme. Now, despite all the evidence pointing to the fact that the virus, whatever it was, peaked a long time ago, and that infection rates, well, they're basically down to nothing now, right? The media narrative is, oh, maybe we shouldn't be easing the lockdown. We'll come to that in a minute. Sunday Express has a story today, which the Sunday Times ran last week, funnily enough. And that is, the hunt for a coronavirus vaccine might be become impossible because infection rates are falling away so much. I mean, we know this. They have quoted Dr. Andrew Ustaniowski. Dr. Andrew Ustaniowski, or Ustaniowski, yeah. It's actually Ustaniowski. He works at North Manchester General Hospital. He is the principal clinical research lead. And he told the Sunday Express that not having enough patients with COVID-19 is a big problem when you are trialling a new vaccine. They just can't get the patients, and the volunteers can't seem to get coronavirus. Infections dying away. And yet, right across the media today, we're leaving lockdown too early. The R rate isn't low enough yet. And yet in amongst all of the bullshit today, and the hills are alive with the sound of bullshit today. You have to be listening to this to believe it. Unbelievable. Presenters editorializing, telling you that, you know, maybe it's too soon. We'll come to that in a minute. It's waist high, the bullshit. You've got to wade through it. The Foreign Secretary, Dominic Raab, was on Sky. Sophie Ridge wanted to know where we are on the virus chart. Remember, they introduced a few weeks ago a chart like the terror threat chart, the virus threat chart, with various colours. We lampooned it. She wants to know about the terror chart and which level we are on. Sophie Ridge speaking with Dominic Raab this morning. And I've done it again. Yes, the fader must be in the elevated position when playing clips, Richie. Here's Dominic Raab, Sophie Ridge.
What level are we currently on?
We're transitioning from level 4 to level 3. We've made steady progress to get the R level down below 1. It's still below 1. It's between 0.7 and 1. So it's below 1, 0.7 and 0.9. If you look at the data, if you want to really see what the trend is showing us, if you compare last Friday's data with the previous Friday, so over a week, we've got over 800 fewer new cases over that period. We've got over 200 fewer people in critical care with coronavirus. I think the deaths are down over that period by 27. That is the steady progress that we're making, which means as we transition to step two on the roadmap to easing restrictions, we can take those steps responsibly, but we just have to be very careful. As Jonathan Van Tam, who you just quoted, has said, we're at a precarious moment. We can ease up, we can protect life, but also livelihoods, get life back to something resembling normal, but we must monitor it very carefully, and if there's any uptick in the number of cases, if we stop making the progress I described, we're going to have to take further measures again and target the virus wherever it may appear. So we're making progress. Obviously, this is a sensitive moment, but we can't just stay in lockdown forever. We've got to transition, and the more we transition through careful steps, the more I think we'll build up confidence in the approach we're taking.
Yes, we can't stay in lockdown forever. So Ridge wants to know, and to be fair, if I was in Ridge's position, I would ask the same question. If you're not quite leaving level 4 on the coronavirus terror chart, and you're not quite at 3, if you're somewhere in between, why then are you easing the lockdown? She puts this particular question to Raab.
Well, as I said, we're transitioning from 4 to 3, and I'll...
But you haven't reached that.
That alert system is obviously decided independently by the scientists. We have at every step along the way followed the advice, not just of the Deputy Chief Medical Officer that you cited, but Sir Patrick Vallance. I spoke to Sir Patrick over the weekend, the Chief Scientific Advisor, and the package of measures we're taking is based on the advice that we get from SAGE. Obviously, we as the elected politicians, we take the decisions, but at every step along the way, we've taken that advice. And the reason that we can take the steps that we're taking tomorrow to start getting more primary school children back to school, to start taking the measures to open up the economy on car showrooms, outdoor markets, is precisely because not just the R level is down below one, the way I described, but also because we're making the progress on the data, as I described. And all of that is very carefully scrutinised, and we rely on, very carefully on the advice from the scientists.
You see, it's hard to escape the view that you thought it would be at level three now. It's not. So you've decided to plough on anyway.
No, we said that we were transitioning. We set out a roadmap. We've set very clear conditions for moving. First of all, step one, which we took earlier in May.
Right, you get the picture. All right. No discussion of the fact that most people, the vast majority of people in any country in the world, will never get it. This is Chris Whitty, the government's chief medical officer. I made a big deal of this a couple of weeks ago. I'm not going to play you the clip, but he said clearly, most people won't get it. Of those who do, the majority won't even display any symptoms. Not so much as a sneeze or a sore throat. Of the ones who do get display symptoms, the vast majority of them will only have a very mild feeling of discomfort. Most of them will never be critically sick. And of the tiny, 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 tiny percentage of those who are critically sick, a very, very, very tiny minority of those will actually die. This is a fact. I was reading online this morning. I think Off Guardian. It could be Off Guardian. I'm not sure. I take Off Guardian with a large pinch of salt, to be honest, because they publish one or two exponents of fake news, they really do. But one of their contributors made the point that Russia's head of coronavirus information, a guy called Alexander, how do you pronounce this? Myasnikov, that's right. Alexander Myasnikov, their head of coronavirus information, in an interview earlier in the week, or last week, the middle of last week, when he believed the interview was over, he was caught on camera saying, and I quote, "It's all bullshit. It's all exaggerated. It's an acute respiratory disease with minimal mortality. Why has the whole world been destroyed? That I don't know," says Alexander Myasnikov, Russia's top man. We could go on and on and on and on with the scientists, the men and the women who've said, this is crazy. What's happening? Okay. Yeah. Professor Peter Openshaw, Imperial College London. We're very interested in Imperial College London. He was on the Mar Show this morning, the Andrew Mar Show on BBC One. He's another SAGE advisor, not a SAGE advisor. See what I did there? He works for SAGE, he doesn't work for them, but he has advised them, the Scientific Advisory Group on Emergencies. Peter Openshaw. And he was asked by Andrew Marr if he's worried about easing the lockdown. Now listen carefully, because he is worried. But later on, he contradicts himself. Is he worried about easing the lockdown?
I think I share with all my scientific colleagues, or virtually all my scientific colleagues, a deep concern that we need to go with great caution. At the moment, we still have quite a large number of cases out there in the community. And I think unlocking too fast carries a great risk that all the good work that's been put in by everyone to try to reduce transmission may be lost. So we do need to proceed with great, great care at this point.
Do you think the government is going too fast?
Well, I think there is a pretty unanimous message now that we need to take this slowly and go step by step. And we need to evaluate the effect of each step before we move to the next one. I don't hear any great dissent amongst the advisers who are speaking in public at the moment.
Your colleague Patrick Vallance is writing in the papers today saying that you have to balance the science against, for instance, the economics and the damage to the economy and job losses and all of that. You'd concur with that?
There's no balance, though. This guy, Patrick Vallance, again, alongside Chris Whitty, is basically calling the shots. You have to balance the risk of letting people out with the economic damage. There is no balance. The economic fallout from this is going to result in the lives of millions and millions of people being destroyed. Suicides, illness, mental illness. There's no balance there. It's going to be far more catastrophic than the cooked up numbers that they've put into the public domain as regards, you know, the damage done by this bloody virus. Right?
That.
Well, I understand that argument. I mean, having grown up and worked all my life in health, obviously my perspective, it comes from the health perspective. And as a doctor, it seems to me that health takes the ultimate, is the ultimate decider. But I can absolutely understand that others have taken into account a broader view. But to me, health is the ultimate priority.
Right, okay. Then they come around to being outdoors and, well, this guy basically says the virus doesn't do well outdoors. Have a listen.
Lots and lots of people are pouring out of their houses onto parks and beaches and so forth. How dangerous do you think that is?
Well, there have been some quite big surveys done now of where infectivity happens. There's been mapping of hundreds of outbreaks. You know, over 320 outbreaks were traced in one particular paper which came out from China, and they looked for where those transmissions were happening, and they could only find a single example where transmission appeared to have occurred in the wide open air.
What was that again? That's important. And of course, Andrew Marr, the useless, I'm not going to swear again, doesn't take him up on this.
Paper which came out from China, and they looked for where those transmissions were happening, and they could only find a single example where transmission appeared to have occurred in the wide open air.
A single example of transmission occurring in the open air.
And they could only find a single example where transmission appeared to have occurred in the wide open air.
And the truth shall set you free, right?
It was mostly domestic transmission within enclosed environments.
Yes.
And some transmission on transport. Mm. But essentially, if you're sitting in the open air at a safe distance and not speaking close up to somebody, and particularly not shouting or singing loudly, then that seems to be very low risk.
Yeah, don't sing loudly. Remember what happened to that church in the US, that nonsense about choir members dying because they were singing too loudly and spreading coronavirus. The truth is in plain sight about this hoax. Now, for those of you who think you can't have your cake and eat it, Richie, is there a virus or is there a hoax? Well, it's both. Respiratory infection doing the rounds. Particularly nasty, I would have said. The hoax is foisting onto us, imposing upon us the notion that it's deadly and that we have to put you under house arrest and shut down the global economy. That's the hoax. Crazy. I'm going to leave you today with the immortal words of Howard Beale, the news anchor from Lumet's Amazing Movie Network. I'm leaving you with his words. I'm going to love you and leave you. Have a marvellous Sunday. Look after yourselves and one another. And we'll talk on Monday's Richie Allen Radio Show tomorrow at 5 o'clock UK time. We're going out with Howard Beale.
I don't want you to protest. I don't want you to ride. I don't want you to write to your congressmen because I wouldn't know what to tell you to write. I don't know what to do about the depression and the inflation and the Russians and the crime in the street. All I know is that first, you've got to get mad. You've got to say, I'm a human being. God damn it. My life has value. So, I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not gonna take this anymore! I want you to get up right now.
Sit up.
Stay with them.
Go to your windows, open them, and stick your head out and yell, I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.